Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 539, Forging Evolve, recorded live on May 19th, 2016. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. Now with 100% less Biowolf. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Godzilla T.
And as I just mentioned, no more Biowolf, which is sad.
Oh,
but that
sad.
Does not prevent us from not blaming him anymore. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and just get this off at the very start. We have a Teespring campaign up right now for our Keep Calm and hashtag Blame Biowolf shirt. We've been doing that for the last couple of days. We got this up, I believe it was Saturday. I got this up after the last show with Biowolf last week. So there's another 9-10 days remaining for the campaign. I believe it's going to end on Sunday. Not this Sunday, but a week from Sunday. So if you wanted to get the shirt, this is the only time that we are getting this shirt out available to be sold. Other than that, I don't think we're going to be selling it again. At least not in the foreseeable future. So if you want one of these shirts, that's the only shirt that I'm aware of that has the hashtag Blame Biowolf thing on it, then you got to act now. You can head on over to teespring.com/podtacular-kcbb. And the KCBB stands for Keep Calm and Blame Biowolf. So you can find the t-shirt there. It's going for $18. And we are trying to get 25 of them sold. Right now we have 8 sold. Someone in here bought quite a few. But we're hoping to get that close to our goal. I think as far as I understand how Teespring works, we currently have enough shirts ordered to make a profit. So as I understand it, all the orders that have been made so far will be fulfilled. But we still want to get to 25 shirts. So if you know some friends who are fans of the show or want a Halo shirt, tell them to come check this out and get it.
Or people that just blame Biowolf.
That too. If you need someone to blame, that's always a good thing to have. So make sure you check that out. Again, this is going to be going to, I think, a week from Sunday is how I have it set up. So check that out. And let's go ahead and jump into some of the news. The big one being today, 343 and Xbox Wire announced that Forge is coming to PC on Windows 10 for free, which is huge. This is gigantic news.
No kidding.
I think this is everyone on Twitter is basically thinking this is the next step towards Halo actually coming to PC. Everyone's still clamoring for MCC on PC, Halo 5 on PC. It's not out of the realm of impossible to do if they can get Forge on Windows 10.
No, definitely not. It is a step in that direction. I just don't know. Halo 3 has been out how many years?
Almost 10. It'll be 10 years next year.
And they just now put a version of Halo 3 on PC? Or are testing a version of Halo 3 on PC?
Well, that was Halo Online has been, was it early last year?
Yeah. Has it even, I don't even know if it's even released.
It's not.
I didn't think so.
The beta is technically done, but the mod for it, the community mod that was made, the El Duido, or El Dorito, it's still out there and people still play it.
Oh, yeah.
I still have a build for it.
They gave you a taste and you can't let go. It's like cookies. I have just one.
Shout out to our Twitch chat for the cookies comment. It would be nice to see 343 actually come out with Halo on the PC. Talking with some people on Twitter and talking to Bio and a few other people today, Halo would do really well on the PC if they did it right. If they had the server browser and if they treated it a lot like how other first-person shooters are done on the PC, it could do well. And it could help rejuvenate the Halo player base, I think. If Halo was on PC.
And with Halo 5, if they could do, I don't know how well cross-platform play would work, but they'd have to have some way to restrict mods.
I would definitely shy away from the cross-platform just because you have so much more control with keyboard and mouse compared to a controller. I'm sure if you put keyboard and mouse players up against controller players, the keyboard and mouse players would completely destroy the controller players just because they're able to react that much more quickly, that much more precisely than the controller players.
I don't know. For the average person, yes, you are definitely...
Even up on the pro level, I think it would be the PC players would have it.
I don't know. I've never seen somebody go head-to-head, you know, a console against a PC, so...
Neither have I. But just the mechanics of it...
It would be an interesting matchup, don't get me wrong.
For sure. The mechanics of it, I think, is just too much advantage to keyboard and mouse. You can do so many different actions with keyboard and mouse in a shorter time span than you can with a controller. I mean, controller is mostly, most of the buttons is your thumbs, unless you have the Elite controller. And for the keyboard, I mean, you have people doing like 300 actions per second on these, my mind is blanking right now. The League games, whatever that genre is called. I'm completely drawing a blank right now. I don't know why. strategy games. There we go.
Yeah.
Strategy games.
Well, you know, a strategy game is a lot different than a shooter, too.
It is.
You know, you still, you know, with keyboard and mouse, you've got one hand that mainly handling your forward, back, and left, right movement, and you know, you have an extra finger or two to handle switch weapons or throw grenades. The nice thing is on a keyboard, the keys are generally a lot, you know, you have a lot less movement distance as far as actually physically moving your finger. But I don't know. You know, you watch some of these better players, and I'm not necessarily just talking pro players. You watch them, and their reticle isn't just swinging around wildly. It's going to target and staying on target. So I don't know. It would be interesting to see. I honestly don't see Halo 5 coming to PC for a very long time. Of course, I probably will wind up eating my words because, you know, like January next year, they're probably going to say Halo 5 PC. You know, who knows?
If ports is out by then.
I didn't expect them to bring Forge to the PC. This would be great if they did it thing, but I don't ever think it's going to happen, and here it is, so who knows?
It was definitely low on the radar, and I don't think a lot of people were really expecting it. I know people wanted it, and I know I've mentioned before that Forge on the PC would kind of make sense just because of the application of moving all that stuff around. It's just a lot easier with a keyboard and mouse, so... It's cool to see that, and we already have Halo Custom Edition with all the modding tools there, so it's really kind of similar in that respect. The interesting thing is going to be what additional features are going to be included with the PC. So if you are going to be assuming you're going to be using the maps that are already built into the game, what other things are you going to be able to add into a map other than just the Forge objects that are there? Will you be able to add your own decals or some other objects? Like,
well, I think they're probably, as far as right out of the box, they'll limit what you can add, if you can add anything.
Oh, for sure.
Because there are too many people out there that will do inappropriate things.
There are people that already do inappropriate things with what they're given in Forge.
Exactly. But still, you give them the creative freedom like that, and it will get 50 times worse. I mean, I've seen what they did with spawn points in Halo Reach, and
if you look at
not safe for
the
work
stuff that's going, well, if you look at the stuff that's going into matchmaking, though, that's going to be vetted through 343. They're going to be looking at all that kind of stuff, so that wouldn't be much of an issue.
True.
Custom stuff, but on the other hand, that's a little
that was
different.
More like screenshots, things like that.
Right.
You know, that is, you know, that stuff's a little bit harder to police. Because that is something that has to be reported And I'm sure it has to be reported multiple times before 343 will actually take a look at it. Because, you know, if one person reports it, it's okay. Well, they may just not like the photo and want to be a pain. But, you know, you get 20 people reporting it. Well, maybe it's something we need to look at. But you know, back on the Forge subject, I think, look at it this way. All the Forgers get to learn all new Forge controls again.
Well, they're similar. You're just using a different interface with the controls.
It's new controls. They'll have to teach themselves. They'll have to reteach the muscle memory.
I don't think it's like a reteach. It's just learning on something different.
It's something different. And that's exactly what Forge was when they made this big change. It was something different.
Yeah, but the interface was the same. It was still a controller.
It was still a controller, but none of the buttons did the same thing. Well, very few of the buttons did the same thing.
Right.
But I would just make a comment. They get to learn it all over again.
Well, if they decide to go the PC route, they don't have to go the PC route.
No, they don't have to.
But it's going to make things so much easier.
Oh, yeah. Especially if, you know, you can, you know, like some of these gaming mice and stuff and gaming keyboards with macro buttons.
Yeah.
You know, if they give you the customization to do that kind of stuff in the Forge program, set up, you know, your own custom buttons, you put it where it's comfortable for you to use, then I can see the PC Forge being a lot even faster than it is now on the console, but you still maintain that a really high degree of precision. Yeah, get that thought out. So it'll be interesting to see. I can't wait to hear what the Forgers say about it after they get to use it.
Right. So there is a couple of things that they've already announced that are going to be specific to the PC forging stuff. One of which we already mentioned was the keyboard and mouse support, which will be really nice. Test and play with friends, so you'll be able to have other forgers come in to your forge session and actually forge and test out stuff with you. Doesn't mean you get to play on the map, but it's all within the forge system. There is increased resolution support up to 4K on multiple resolutions, so you don't have to do 1080p native at all. It can scale to whatever screen resolution you have, which will be nice. And then you'll be able to build it, of course, on Windows 10 and then publish it to Xbox One, which kind of makes it sound like you'll be able to build the map on your PC and then instantly deploy it to your Xbox to test without having to go through file share, is what it sounds like.
Well, probably, yeah. With the ability of Windows 10 to link directly to your Xbox, yeah, it'll probably be able to port it just straight over your network and not have to go through the Halo or the 343 servers as far as like a file share.
And I'm guessing with that, yeah, I'm guessing with that, there's going to be something in the game to recognize, hey, this is a file that's being tested. Don't allow this to be uploaded to a file share. Or maybe, depending on how the Forge system is on the PC, maybe it is something where it's like, hey, port to the Xbox, and then I can upload to my file share that way.
Well, the nice thing is using the PC, one of the big problems a lot of people that I've heard make comment on is the fact that any map they're working on is viewable on your file share, any custom map. So that will help in that regard because you can work on it on the PC and it's not necessarily on your file share.
I still can't believe that's a thing, though, because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah, it's a complaint. Yeah, I mean, it's a legitimate complaint. You got people working on maps, and they don't want, you know, you don't want your untested, unpolished map out there. So they put stupid names on them.
But for people who are forgers, they're going to know that, hey, this is some kind of secret project. I'm going to go in and check it out anyways.
Yeah, but if they start doing this on the Windows 10 program, then it's not even on their Xbox, so it won't be on their file share until they're ready to actually deploy it and start testing.
Right.
But which would be nice. I really wish they had a system that you could designate which maps and game types that you want to share.
Well, it should be a, if you want to put it on your file share, then you should have to put it on your file share. Not, it just goes there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyways, so that stuff is all coming to Windows 10. We all speculate that there is some possibility of Halo possibly coming to Windows 10 later down the road as well, but that's for another discussion. But this has been pretty much the big hoorah for the day, the giant announcement, and everyone was going crazy about. There's going to be more information about it coming out later this year, but we don't have any estimated time frame on when this will be out. But there is new environments, stuff coming, advanced file share capabilities, new pieces, palettes, props, and all that kind of stuff that's going to be still being added to Forge. It sounds like Forge is going to be something that's going to be continually updated past the July, or not the July, the June guaranteed content cycle.
Which is good. It's important that they continue to support Forge, because that is a way to get the community involved in content, whether it be for matchmaking or just customs.
Right.
And the more wacky game types out there, the closer we get to Action Sack. 343? Hint. Oh.
Action Sack has always been one of those, they've kind of introduced it late into the cycle, though, right? Because for Halo 4, yeah. Action Sack wasn't something until quite a few months after launch, if I remember correctly.
I think it was almost, not quite a year. It was pretty late. It was quite a while after release. I just, you know, it's a fun game type, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I would accept it even as a rotated, you know, a playlist you rotate in. You know, it doesn't have to be a permanent playlist. Just rotate it in every once in a while.
I think if they add it at some point, though, having it as a permanent playlist would be the best option. Just because it is going to be introducing game modes that people are going to want to play. Other than that, though, that's what our customs night is for.
Yes.
Fridays, 8:30.
Yeah, need lots of people at custom nights.
There you go.
So we can have lots of fun.
Yes.
Still waiting for speed.
Should check to see if someone's made that yet. If not, we should do it.
Yes, because I'm such an expert forger. I will do some digging and see if somebody's made something. I saw a map a couple of days ago that reminded me of speed, but I didn't get a chance to look at it. Before we get too far into this, I'd like to thank everybody that gave us well wishes. My wife is doing fine. She's back home.
Yay.
Doing better. I want to throw that in. I was going to do that at the beginning, but I got all wound up about Forge.
Appropriately so. Just,
I wanted to say thank you to everybody that gave us well wishes. So
we're happy everything is doing all right and that you're back.
Yes. Sitting in a hospital for 5 days. Anyway.
That's when you blame Beowulf.
Yeah, blame Beowulf.
There you go.
Blame Beowulf.
Hashtag blame Beowulf. Anywho, among that news, we also have the announcement of Fractures, which is kind of a extension of Halo Evolutions. It's going to be a new collection of short stories. So it has authors like Matt Forbeck, Troy Denning, Morgan Lockhart, Kevin Grace, Frankie, all who have written short stories in the past for Halo, and some new authors as well, adding their own little tales to the Halo franchise, which will be really cool. That's going to be out this September, and it is available for pre-order at Simon & Schuster and other retailers like Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or whatever other place that you normally buy books from. So this will be something that's really cool. I haven't read all of Evolutions yet. There's a few other longer stories. I think there's 3 stories in Evolutions I haven't read yet. But
yeah, I've been through all of them, but it's been a while.
If you haven't had the chance to read Evolutions, I think it's definitely one of those books that is worth picking up. If you haven't read any of the Halo novels whatsoever, a good place to start would be the original trilogy, and then Ghost of Onyx is good. New Blood is very good, and it's more appropriate for the Halo 5 story if you're just getting into Halo. Last Light's also pretty good because it gives a little background behind Blue Team in between the original trilogy and Halo 5. and I guess more actually Onyx. But I would definitely recommend getting Evolutions if you're looking for some extra reading for Halo, because there's some really good short stories in there.
Yeah, I really enjoy all the stories in Evolutions. Hard to beat the original trilogy, though.
Yeah. I think there's a few in there that are like pretty well known within the Halo community. Like Dirt's a big one. And I'm blanking on a lot of the other titles at the moment.
Well, let's see. Herd of Midlothian was in there, wasn't it? In Evolutions?
I believe so. I'm just grabbing my Evolutions book real quick so I can check. Stopping on the Heels of a Fuss. Dirt. Headhunters. That was a good one.
Yeah, Headhunters. That was part of their anime shorts.
Yep, and the Mona Lisa was in there as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Mona Lisa is the one I was thinking of.
The Impossible Life and the Possible Death of Preston J. Cole. That one's by Nylund.
Really good one.
So that's a really good one. And I kind of liked Palace Hotel. That was a good one. But yeah, there's some really good stories in Evolutions if you have a chance to pick that one up.
All right, I'm going to have to listen to that again.
There's a few little art pieces in here as well. So, yeah, good stuff. Fractures, again, comes out in September. You can pre-order it. And I don't think there's really much more in there. It's going to be 416 pages. And just to kind of give you a comparison, Halo Evolutions is about 530 pages.
Well, they are going, two of the stories that are going to be included are New Blood and Frankie's, shoot, what was the name of it? The one for about the AI.
I know what you're talking about.
I lost. The one Frankie wrote.
Something's Testimony. Something Testimony.
Yeah, Saint's Testimony.
Saint's Testimony.
Saint's Testimony.
It.
Yeah. Those two are going to be in there.
They really? Said, why? New Blood's already out in book form.
Ew. I'm not the one that made the rules.
Where'd you see that it was going to be in there?
It was on my point.
It was?
Yeah, it was in the start, in with the story on the...
On the cannon fodder?
I can't find it. Where is it?
Hang on, I'll find it. Nothing like doing our research while we're doing the podcast.
Yeah, let's do this all at the same time. Oh, shoot.
So the only mention of New Blood in the cannon fodder is just saying the author of the critically acclaimed New Blood. It's not saying New Blood's in there. It's just saying that,
well,
Matt Forbeck is writing. They'll say that wouldn't make any sense to put a book that's already in print into another book that's going to be in print. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah, Pins, the ending of Saint's Testimony was very thought-provoking, I will say.
Especially seeing which way they took Halo 5.
Uh-huh. Which we'll get to here pretty soon after we're finally done with the campaign and stuff. There is so much potential for where the story can go, given Halo 5's ending. It'll be interesting to see where they take it. I don't like saying this, but it kind of sucks that Brian Reed's still the one that's writing the story behind Halo 6. Given Halo 4's crappy story and Halo 5's not so good storytelling. So, yeah. Anyways. But I'm looking forward to Fractures. It should be good. Especially with the lineup of artists that we're getting.
Yeah.
And Joe Staten's in there, too. Forgot to mention him. So, lots of Halo writers that have already made stuff for Halo are going to be in here. And then a couple of new ones. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, yes. I need new books.
Yes, new books.
I'm kind of wearing out the ones I got.
Well, don't wear them out too much because we still need them to talk about on the show.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So that's going to cover it for the newsy type stuff. One other thing I'm going to mention before we get into the campaign stuff and hopefully finish that out tonight is we are currently working with Podcast Evolve, Drunken Halo, and the Delta Halo podcast to do a podcast tournament of sorts. So in a couple weeks, we're going to be pitting teams of Drunken Halo, Podtacular, Delta Halo, and Podcast Evolve, and we're kind of doing a tournament of sorts. We're still working out the details, but this is something that we started putting in the works last week. and it looks like it's going to come to fruition. So we're going to need people to kind of help fill in our roster a bit. So I'm going to lean on towards picking people out of our Spartan company first. So I'm going to be sending out a message later this weekend to get some people interested. It's going to be, at the moment, the week of June 5th. I think we're going to be, at least from what I heard last, kind of there's some developments that have been made since I was last informed, so I got to go check up on what's actually changed. But it sounds like we're going to be doing kind of elimination play on, or pool play on the 8th, which will be Wednesday. And then we'll move into elimination play on Thursday. So if anyone is interested in participating in that and want to be part of the Potacular team, and if you're part of the Spartan company, hit me up, let me know that you're interested, and we'll try to organize some time to actually get some coordinated play in to do some arena scrimmages and that kind of stuff. So that should be fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay, now it's time to move on to the campaign. Hopefully we'll get through both of these missions. And this first one up is pretty short. So hopefully we'll get through that one. I want to change up our approach to this one just a little bit. I want to kind of go through the gameplay aspect of it and then go through the lore aspect. Because the gameplay aspect is pretty simple and pretty short for this mission.
Go from A to B.
Yeah. So let's
A to D.
Yeah. So let's just go through the gameplay aspect of this and then let's go through the lore aspect. Because the lore aspect we could probably talk to quite a bit. So starting off, right as you spawn, you're going to turn right around and get your first two pieces of intel. Yay. That was easy.
Yeah. Turn around.
Turn around. Turn around. There's two of them right there. And you basically, from here, you have, what is it? Four waves slash areas that you're going through that have distinct transition areas. So after you turn around, get the pieces of intel, you're going to go up against the first wave of crawlers. And then once you get through the crawlers, your second wave is going to be soldiers and a pair of knights. And there's an achievement here for you to cover. Mr. Achievement Man, GT.
Sorry. Shoot. Harbinger. Let's see. Which one is that? This one is you have to do it on legendary difficulty. You must beat the mission on legendary without ever allowing your whole team to die, which is difficult, especially with Warden. But basically, you just need to make sure that you don't wipe. I believe you can reset checkpoint, and it still works.
It says here, you forfeit your chances of earning this achievement if blue team goes down or if you choose to restart from a previous checkpoint.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So you can't do that. This one may or may not make achieving Halo.
You could do it. Especially with a shortcut near the end.
Yes. But it's, basically just move slowly. And make sure you clear areas before you move into the next one. I highly recommend that you use Promethean weapons. You will be amazed at how well the bolt shot and the suppressor do at killing soldiers and knights.
You want to do that right away. After you take care of the crawlers, which you're probably going to be using your pistol for, drop your pistol, pick up a suppressor or a bolt shot. And just run with those for a good part of the campaign.
And if you're going for this achievement, I would recommend you stay away from the scatter shots, just because you tend to have to be a little close to use them, and it puts you within melee range. Be careful as you move through, because this level does have several snipers in it, which they will be using. I am not having a good night. Brain fart. Binary rifle.
Binary rifles come a little later on,
yes. There are several knights with incendiary cannons, and just as many of them with scatter shots. So stay away from the knights. Shoot from long range.
Yep. The knights for the first round, though, I think depending on difficulty, they have the scatter shots or the incineration cannons.
I think it's one of each. because I believe there's two knights there.
Yeah, but I think on Legendary, it's two instant cannons, I think.
Well, it's been a while since I played it Legendary. I'm not into that kind of punishment.
But why not?
Listen, you know, I kind of like to actually enjoy the gameplay.
Oh, okay.
But just be aware that you need to make sure that you're in cover from those knights. Hit the sweet spots on either side. You break off their armor and try to get the insta-kill with the headshot.
Easiest way to do that is with a suppressor.
Yeah. The bolt shot does really good at peeling the armor off. So if you have like a... If you're playing co-op, you have a bolt shot, and somebody else has a rifle, you peel their armor off, they go for the headshot, or you can switch over and try to get the headshot.
That's if you're playing on co-op, because if you're doing solo, easiest way is to just unload a suppressor into the critical areas and get to where he opens his mask. And if he opens his mask and you're able to get a headshot off, then that's the easiest way to address that.
But there's plenty of suppressor ammo, plenty of bolt shot ammo, because you will be dealing with crawlers all the way.
Oh, yes.
So there's plenty of those. Be sure to make the watchers a priority, because any damage you do, they will undo. And again, with the tracking of the bolt shot and the suppressor, they go down pretty quick.
Yep, they do.
After you get through, or towards the end of this first area, you have another piece of intel.
Right, so in the middle area, kind of, there's a little ring section. You can actually go under that to get to the area where you have the knights and the other crawlers and the soldiers. There'll be a little kind of...
Forerunner terminal.
Right, but there's like a little piece that's sectioned off there that the terminal's in. So you can go walk up the terminal. It's pretty easy to see. It's hard to miss. Just make sure that if you're going over top and then you're clearing stuff out, to go back around towards the middle on the bottom and pick up that piece of intel. And then you have 3 out of 5 already done just within the first 5 minutes.
This one, when it comes to hunting for intel, is pretty easy.
Yeah, and this is a short mission too. Ridiculously short. It sucks that this mission is so short because we only have 3 blue team missions to begin with.
Yeah, I was really hoping that at least half the game was going to be blue team.
I think everyone was, honestly. But that's for another discussion, which we'll likely get into
later.
Which
is coming.
Yes, very much so. After you clear out that first section, you have a little gondola ride, or whatever you want to call it. Cortana's talking about her plans, and actually Chief is kind of contesting her on the stuff that she's doing, but we'll get to the lore stuff here in a little bit. After you take the little ride up, you come to another section, and this is where you have the ramps up. You have like the 3 kind of back and forth ramps. You have a bunch of crawlers on the first level with a couple of soldiers as you go up the ramps. You have another set of crawlers on the second level, and then on the third level you have some more soldiers and some focus turrets. As you're going up, there's lots of ammo crates that you can use to pick up scatter shots.
Lots of ammo. You have incendiary cannons, light rifles, if you want, on the first floor after you get off the elevator. If you're a legendary weapons person, you have the Didact Syndicate at the very back of the level.
You mean the Didact Signet, not Syndicate?
Signet, sorry.
Signet, yeah.
Signet.
Syndicate.
I like Signet.
That's a different video game.
Cigarette, no.
Something else to really note with this section, too, is you have the soldiers that drop the splinter turrets. Those are really, really useful against both soldiers and crawlers. Yeah. Well, focus turrets, not so much. But definitely for the crawlers and the soldiers, they have a very good effect.
Well, the focus turrets, whenever you're shooting the focus turrets, you really want to time your shots. You want to be shooting it when it's charging up, because that is when you're doing the maximum amount of damage to the turret. When it's all closed up, it's like it's inside its armored shell, and it takes a lot of punishment to get through that. But as it opens up to shoot, You want to either come in from the side, the two sides will open up and you can shoot at the core, or you want to shoot right down the nose of it, where the beam comes out, and you will expend a lot less ammunition taking those out. That's why you have an incendiary cannon, too. They pretty much kill everything.
You're given ample supply of weapons in here. There should be no reason why this section would be difficult, even on legendary.
Well, it depends on if you do the shortcut or not. Or no, that's next level. Never mind. All right, getting composed.
We're not there yet. Slow down a little bit. Also, splinter grenades are a very useful thing here as well, especially against the crawlers, because you can clear out a nice cluster of them, especially on the first section, right as they're starting to charge you, and then the second section as you're finally getting up there and they're kind of just standing there. You throw a couple of those in there and you'll do some pretty hefty damage and get some of the crawlers out of the way as you ascend the ramps. So zigzag back and forth. Definitely use the splinter turrets, the splinter grenades, and some of the other power weapons there. The Didax Signia is good to use all the way up, I think, until the focus turrets, in which case you want to drop that back for a suppressor or a light rifle or bolt shot, whatever duo combination you want to run with that. After you go through the focus turrets, you have a little hallway that you go through, and it opens up to your first set of snipers. So there's a little elevated section kind of further out in the back. You have two snipers on the bottom level, and I think two snipers on the top, along with some other soldiers that have the splinter turrets. So as you get into this area, you want to, if you're running solo, quickly order your fire team to take out some of the binary rifle soldiers or the splinter turret soldiers, and you want to hide some cover and do this. Same with the binary rifle soldiers, because those take one headshot and they're out. Those are the easiest ones to take out. And then, at least with the splinter turrets, because the projectiles take time to travel, you have at least a chance to dodge those. But definitely focus on getting the binary rifle soldiers out first. Deal with any crawlers that decide to come towards you, and then wrap up with the splinter turret soldiers. At least that's the best way I have found to go about getting that done. You also have a piece of intel that is underneath the first section. So right where you have the two soldiers on the ground floor, where you first come into the room, your first piece of intel, or your fourth piece of intel, is in that section. And then even further back underneath the structure, before you go up either one of the side ramps, there is a skull that you want to pick up as well.
Which is the Famine Skull.
Yes. It is a little tricky to find, but just make sure that you are still downstairs. The easiest way to make sure you don't miss it is hug the wall that the ramp is going up on, and just keep on hugging that, and you'll make sure that you get into the hallway that's underneath, that's all the way in the back. And that's the one skull for this mission. Pretty easy. As you go up the ramp, you're going to be greeted by even more soldiers. These have scatter shots, suppressors, binary rifles, you name it. There's a lot of firepower that's going to be coming at you. You want to be very careful as you're coming up over the top, and they're going to try to draw you out, especially the soldiers with scatter shots. They're going to try to make it to where you have to get in close. They're going to dodge behind cover. They're going to back up to where they have support from their binary rifle bros and the other soldiers with the incineration cannons. So just make sure you keep your distance. Definitely recommend using light rifles here, and then have a couple of people possibly pushing with the suppressors to take out the armor of the knights.
And splinter turrets wherever possible.
Yep. Splinter turrets and splinter grenades are very useful if you're able to pick those up. And you have two of the splinter turrets that drop from the two soldiers that you're going to be taking out as you come up the ramps. So definitely use those. I personally would use those on the knights, because they have a pretty good effect on getting the armor out pretty quickly. Have someone with a light rifle take out the binary rifle snipers. Get those out of the way, because those are easy headshots if you're able to land those. And then have a couple others working on the soldiers, just slowly working them down that are on the sides. This really isn't that hard of a section if you approach it the right way and just make sure that you're keeping your distance. Because if you try to push in for close quarters, there are a lot of times you'll get struck down pretty quickly.
And the bolt shot and suppressor are range weapons. You don't have to be real close for them to be effective.
No, and there's plenty of ammo if you need to restock. There's, unlike in multiplayer, the enemy's weapons do stay around a little bit longer, so you can go by and pick up some more ammunition from the other Prometheans that you eliminate in the previous area. But it's something that you want to make sure you're always having reserves for ammo, because you will get stuck in points where you'll have to push because the soldiers are just hiding behind corners.
Mm-hmm.
I found a lot of times when I'm playing through this mission, and even before this section, but I'll push forward and there'll be a couple soldiers or crawlers still left behind. And for each one of these areas, you have to completely clear it out before Cortana lets you move on to the next area.
Yeah, this whole mission's like that.
So if there's some reason the door isn't opening, it's because there's still an enemy left somewhere.
Somewhere.
Which is a pain to go find.
They will show themselves pretty quickly. They're not really that shy.
If you get close enough, for sure. It's a pain, though, to sometimes go and find them, because they'll be in spots where you're just not expecting it. So you just got to be mindful of where that's going to be. Anyways, after you clear out everybody in here, including the knights and the soldiers, you are pretty much going on to your final big boss battle, which is going to be... Well, hang on. Before that, last piece of intel. Yeah, I almost forgot that. So as you're making your way into the area with the knights, there's going to be lifts that kind of go over from side to side. That's where you will find that first kind of opposition of soldiers. And that's where they'll be hiding behind walls and stuff and come out and try to shoot you with the scatter shot. But in that little pit area, there is another, so similar to the third piece of intel, you're going to kind of go back bottom middle, and there's another forerunner terminal, and that's your final piece of intel for this mission.
Yay, all the intel's done.
Yay. Pretty easy. And then Warden's final stand against Blue Team. So this is a pain if you're having to actually fight Warden. I played it on Heroic when I first played through it, and I think I died probably 3 or 4 times before I successfully killed off Warden. But you have to be super smart with how you divvy out weapons to AIs if you're running solo, or kind of hand out roles to your teammates as you're going through here. There's incineration cannons on both sides of the room, on the sides of the room. There's plenty of weapon crates for suppressors, light rifles, scatter shots, and a couple other things. You definitely want to keep moving. You don't want to stand still, because Warden has 2 nasty attacks that will completely decimate you if you decide to stand still.
Well, not to mention he'll just come right up in your face and, you know, ground pound you.
Yeah.
Or swing his sword.
Yeah. So keep moving. Use the thrust. Use the slide thrust technique. That'll help get you across the map. And use the grav lift to get yourself out of trouble if you need to. I find it's best when running solo to have your AI people focus on one of the wardens, and then you in turn focus on it as well, while they have it distracted, try to focus on his back and running away from the other wardens, and you'll take him out pretty quickly that way. That's kind of the tactic I've used for solo. Do you have any other tactics, GT?
Yeah, I just skipped the area.
Other than skipping the area, because we haven't gotten there yet.
As far as actually fighting the wardens, it's pretty much it's stick and move. Use your AI to try to distract him so you can get a good shot to his back to take him down as quickly as possible, but be aware of the other wardens. As you eliminate them, it does get a little easier because you have less enemies to keep her eye on. Also, if I remember correctly, the longer you fight him, the more soldiers and crawlers spawn in as well.
And focus turrets.
So you want to kill him. You want to kill him as quickly as possible. So break out the big bad boys, bring the binary rifles from the previous room, grab incendiary cannons. You know, try to bring all your heavy equipment in when you first come into that room to do as much damage to the wardens as possible. Do your best to focus on one warden at a time. That way you can do maximum amount of damage, because they will dance around. If you injure one, he'll tend to drop to the back for a brief period, and then he'll come charging forward. So you can do that. There is also an achievement in this room. In doing this, you need to do co-op. It can be done on heroic or legendary. You need to kill two wardens at the same time.
Dun, dun, dun. I don't even think I have this.
Yeah, I don't have it yet. You do have a small grace period. I would say 5 to 10 seconds between warden deaths. But you need to, if one warden's in the death animation, the other one needs to be in the death animation relatively quickly. So try to, if you're going for the achievement, try to do the same amount of damage to two wardens simultaneously. Have two people take on one warden, two people take on the other warden, preferably with equivalent weapons. The binary rifle does a good job of staggering him if you can hit him in the face, and it does a lot of damage that way. And then, of course, the incendiary cannon just does damage all over. But like I said, try to do equal amount of damage to both wardens and get them to die as absolutely as closely as possible to get the achievement to unlock.
Cool. The instant cannons, or pretty much any of the weapons, maybe not the binary rifle, but if you get just pounding it into the warden's back, especially if you have your AI distracting them, it'll take out the warden very quickly.
Yeah, if you're solo, definitely use your AI to distract the warden.
So now we can talk about the shortcut, since
now
a lot of people know about this,
okay,
I think.
That's the correct way to do it. Now, here's the fast way to do it. When you enter the room, you can do this from the right or the left. Run over to the man cannons on the platforms to either the right or the left of the room. You want to go off the man cannon, and you want to ground pound onto the pillar directly in front of you in the middle of the room. There's one to either side. After you get up there, you want to jump, thrust, and then ground pound to the upper platform at the rear of the room. And if you don't do it quite right, be ready to clamber as well. Because if you don't get far enough on the ledge, you can slide off. And if you're quick enough, you can clamber back up. And then you can just run out of the room and not have to fight any of the wardens.
Makes it so much easier.
In other words, shortcut.
Big shortcut. Giant shortcut. Probably the biggest boss battle, and there's a shortcut for it.
Uh-huh.
Arguably the biggest battle. Boss battle.
And that's pretty much the end.
Yeah.
Run down the hall, trigger the cutscene, see 25 wardens show up, and wet yourself.
At least Cortana takes away quite a few of them.
Yes.
Still not very nice, though.
No.
So let's get to the lore aspect of this mission. At the very beginning, or I guess let's step back just a little bit more, at the very end of the last mission, we had Fireteam Osiris meet up with Blue Team, where we find out that they really have the same objective all along of finding and stopping Cortana. So Locke tells Chief that Cortana is bad, and Chief says, I know. And then Cortana whisks away Blue Team in front of Locke, even though Chief's like, don't do it, Cortana, don't do it. So after getting spawned into this, I guess it's actually in the gateway. And whenever Exuberant Witness was talking about a realm to merge between the digital world and the physical world, it seems like Chief and Blue Team are kind of in this digital realm of sorts. Because if you look down, which I'm assuming that they're in the gateway, you don't see Genesis. You see this kind of like, it's almost like Tron in a way, if you think about it.
Well, the gateway, yeah, they are definitely in the gateway. But as it states, I don't think they've been digitized. I think they're just, they're in that transition zone where the physical and the digital can exist simultaneously.
It's like the inner dimension of what was it? Onyx?
Yeah.
Kind of like another dimension.
A slip space bubble.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Something like that.
You know, they could, the Forerunners had technology or had the knowledge to be able to put, you know, create a slip space bubble inside a slip space bubble. That's hard to say twice. That could operate in different time frames. So this whole realm of physical and digital coexisting, yeah, pretty well. You know, it's to me, it's within their realm of being able to do. The interesting part is right at the very beginning of the level, Warden actually starts to attack Blue Team. He actually does the Didact chokehold on Chief, just like in Halo 4.
Yep.
And Cortana rips the Warden away, takes him away. And this is where I started questioning who's in control of who. Because, you know, up until now, you kind of thought, okay, the Warden is the one in control. Cortana may not necessarily, she may be being influenced by the Warden. Well, at this point now, it looks like, it's starting to look like Cortana's influencing the Warden. And as you get further and further into the level, that gets more and more prevalent.
Another thing I noticed too, as you get in more and more, is the dialogue between Warden and Cortana, at least to me, seems to indicate that when the Warden found Cortana, he obviously knew something about the reclamation and the librarian's plans and whatnot. And as we'll find out, or kind of as we found out in the last mission with Exuberant Witness and Fireteam Osiris, Cortana may or may not be the reclaimer that the librarian had planned. According to Exuberant Witness, it's supposed to be humanity that is supposed to be reclaiming the mantle. Whereas it almost sounds like the Warden like sees that Cortana was made from humans, but has kind of almost recognizes that Cortana has the capacity to enforce this, like control the Guardians and enforce this peace on the galaxy. And it almost sounds like Warden tried to kind of like planted those seeds in Cortana, and then Cortana just ran with it. And now, since Cortana is getting so much more power, being in the domain, accessing the domain, the Warden's kind of like, it's like the Warden gave Cortana this idea and this power, but now she's gotten so powerful that she has more control over the Warden. But the Warden's still trying to make sure that Cortana is successful in her mission, and that's why the Warden is constantly trying to hold off Blue Team, because he knows why Blue Team's there. He knows why Fireteam Osiris there, but Cortana doesn't want to believe it.
Well, it's, you know, that's wrapped up in the final line of the mission, or well, one of the final lines of the mission. But yeah, I agree with you. It may have started out that Warden was in control, and Cortana has just been slowly, as she's gotten stronger, as she's learned more and more, that she is now the master. And by the end of the level, it's very evident that she has control over Warden, whether he wants her to or not.
One line from this mission, too, that indicates that, I think, is Warden said that he could have burned Cortana from the domain when he found her, but he didn't, which kind of leaves some speculation there as to his intentions with Cortana. But to him, the reclamation is kind of already going forward, because he's already convinced Cortana to pursue this.
Well, I think it's something that the Warden, it's something that the Warden has always believed, that an Ancilla would be the one to claim the mantle of responsibility. And, but he, you know, of course, he was bound by the Forerunners not to be able to do that. You know, they put safeguards in place to keep one of their Ancillas from doing exactly what Cortana's doing. And that stems from their war with the Flood, the Logic Plague, where the Flood could infest an Ancilla. You know, the Flood literally became a digital virus and could corrupt Ancillas. So I can see where the Forerunners would put safeguards in place to keep an Ancilla from gaining too much control. What Warden sees in Cortana is a way around that. So he rescues, or however you want to put it, leaves her in the domain and coerces her into taking this action, because from everything we know, we're probably only dealing with a fragment of Cortana. Hence, the ending of Halo 4, she split off all these fragments into the Didact ship.
Well, and we don't know exactly what fragment of Cortana we're dealing with either.
Well, we know we're dealing with a rampant fragment, but, we don't. That's about all we know. The domain has supposedly healed her, or more likely driven her even further nuts. Just the overwhelming amount of information. Similar to what we saw in Halo CE when she first interfaced with the Halo ring. She's just a little bit snippety.
So another part of the domain as well, though, if I remember reading from the Forerunner trilogy, is I thought the domain was basically, because of the Flood infection in the galaxy, the network was kind of rendered inert, and it was just kind of like suppressed because of the Flood. Because of how much damage to slip space that the Flood was causing.
No, actually the domain was destroyed by the Halo rings. Because the domain, now, the Flood did make it difficult for Forerunners to connect to the domain because of some relation to slip space. The amount of, with it, basically the way I understood it is the movement of the Halo rings disrupted the slip space travels because not enough reconciliation was taking place after moving these massive objects. And that was interfering with the Forerunner's connection to the domain. And then with the Flood activating all the precursor artifacts, Star Roads, and all these other precursor artifacts, that just exacerbated it. But even towards the end of that time, the Forerunners were still could access the domain. And at the very end of that, if I remember correctly, the Flood spoke with the librarian shortly before the Halo rings fired, and basically made the comment that the Halo rings would destroy the domain, because that would put the Didact in his cryptum in solitude. He wouldn't have the domain to help him regain his thoughts. He wouldn't have that deep meditation that the domain offers.
Okay, sounds right. Yeah, you're probably better at remembering that than I am.
There's a thousand ways you could probably take this. The way, with everything I've seen so far, this is my opinion and my opinion only.
We will get Halo Cannon on here at some point to get us straight.
The point of Cortana coming back, I see her as a fragment of the whole. One of the fragments she split off into the Didact ship, got sucked into slip space when the ship was destroyed, and that's how she's accessing the domain. The Warden found her and reconstructed part of her, or made her to where she could operate again, and then all the information that's in the domain, which I'm not even going to theorize on how the domain is magically back, has corrupted her thoughts even further, along with the Warden.
I wonder, Pins, do you remember something in Escalation that was possibly referencing the domain? That's the only other place I can think of that might have something of value to explain that. Otherwise, I'm just going to have to go back and read the books.
Yeah, I mean, the domain originated with the precursors, because the precursors are the Flood. But, yeah, I haven't seen anything stating that the domain was repairing itself or it wasn't totally destroyed. Now, granted, I haven't read every piece of Halo fiction out there. There's people that have done a lot on that as well.
Pins makes a good point, too, that, and this is something I totally forgot to mention, but in last week's Cannon Fodder, Grim hid in there the missing pages of the Halsey Journal from Halo Reach.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read that yet.
Pins said that those pages have some impact, though, so there might be something in there. I need to read that. I actually haven't read the journal ever.
I've made it through the first 30 pages 12 times.
Nice. It's like me not finishing Broken Circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho. So during this whole discussion going through this mission, you have this back and forth between mostly the Warden and Cortana. And yeah, I know, Pins, I'm sorry. The Warden is trying to, and you find this kind of near the end, but is trying to convince Cortana that Chief and Blue Team are just there to try to stop her and undo her plans. And one of the things that you kind of hear that starts to make you realize that Chief is really trying to get to the root of what Cortana is doing is that he recognizes that Cortana is using psychological tactics to draw them to her. And Fred kind of makes a note that is this kind of a trap? And Chief's just like, we're going to go find her and try to still convince her.
Yeah, that conversation, it's an interesting conversation because you have Cortana talking to Chief like, you know, they're all buddy-buddy just like before. You know, she's referring to past times, past battles. And the Chief basically says, what are you doing? Why are you using these psychological tactics on me? And then he backs that up by, how many people did you kill? How many people, do you know how many people you killed when you activated the Guardians? And then you hear Cortana get a little defensive. You know, kind of that, you know, that step back and stutter moment. She never answers the question. She diverts to something else. But you really get the sense that, yeah, the Chief knows exactly what Cortana is doing, and he's doing what he can to stop her. He's trying to be the sane one of the two and talk her down.
He's still doing his job. He's still trying to protect humanity.
Yeah. And the Warden the Warden knows that. It's not like Chief's hiding hiding his objective. But Cortana still kind of acts like it's the old days. You know, the Halo 2, Halo 3 days. You know, where, you know, they're in it together. And as as this conversation matures and they go through this, you know, with the Warden, the Chief, and Cortana, you get to this final room where Cortana really exhibits how much power she's amassed. She basically, like I said earlier, Warden brings in 12 copies of himself and is attacking Blue Team. And Cortana basically puts her foot down and says, Warden, or says no, if I remember correct. She causes all the Wardens but one to just vanish, as well as Blue Team's weapons. So this is the first time you really see Cortana exercise a lot of her power.
Right. Being able to convert physical matter into digital matter for the weapons, at least, just completely dissolve them.
As she approaches Blue Team, she's still, the reason she brought Blue Team there, one is to find out if she could still trust John. And through their conversations, she realized that John was not on her side. And in doing that, she decides to put Blue Team in a cryptum for 10,000 years. And she exhibits physical control over the Spartans by a hard light shield or force field or something that immobilizes them.
I think that's part of the cryptum too, though.
Well, she's in control of the cryptum. But in this scene, she also has a much more physical presence than she has had in any of the games. You know, Cortana has always been this kind of see-through hologram type character. She never really looked like she had a physical body. In this scene, she has a physical body, or what appears to be.
I think it's safe to assume that it's a physical form.
It's kind of really scary too, because after she immobilizes Blue Team, you know, she has this real sad face on. And then as she's walking away, her facial expressions change almost to
anger,
a real determination.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, you know, she's basically, this is going to happen.
She was betrayed, and now she's going to unleash her justice.
But 10,000 years, that's a long time.
Just ask the Didact.
Yeah.
It's still, I mean, I know we're going to talk about this later, but it still kind of makes you wonder what happened during the Librarian's interaction with Cortana.
I don't know,
like,
how much that really plays into this.
I mean, it seemed like it'd be like so important. I think we're in here.
Yeah, it would. And it may come in. We definitely haven't seen the end of this storyline, but the one thing we have to remember, at least one thing the way I look at it, is we're only dealing with a fragment of Cortana.
Agreed.
You know, she's been split off into so many separate pieces that the pieces that the Librarian may have changed might not be there.
Well, I think as far as we know, that Cortana that met the Librarian was still whole and part Cortana.
Well, yeah, the Cortana that the Librarian stole in Halo 4 was the full Cortana. It wasn't a fragment. She was actually in the Forerunner system, and the Librarian took her. We don't know if the Librarian did anything to her. I mean, if anything were to happen, you know, I would think she would give Cortana the ability to stop the rampancy. But due to the time frame, Cortana wasn't able to realize that she had the ability to fix herself. And that's pure speculation.
There's a lot to discuss there.
Oh, yeah. You know, now we are dealing with just a small part of what Cortana was. It's like only dealing with her security algorithms or her hacking algorithms. And I think that plays into the type of character Cortana has become.
Yeah. Anywho, that covers most of it, I think, for this mission, right?
Yeah. That's pretty much the end of the mission.
Discussion between Didact and Cortana, and then Chief getting up there and
Warden.
Or, yeah, Warden and Cortana. But, yeah, so Cortana was basically luring Blue Team in. It was almost like to make sure that it's almost like she was trying to convince Blue Team, and then Blue Team was still on a mission to try to stop her from doing it. And kind of in the end, well, she wasn't going to change her mind, so she decided to put Blue Team in the cryptum.
She was trying to convince John to join her, well, Blue Team, and to see her point of view, that this would ensure peace. Well, yeah, it would ensure peace, but the price of that peace is too high. It's great to have peace, but if you have no freedom, what's the point?
Right. Another thing I'm trying to think about, too, is that was Warden almost doing Blue Team a favor? Because, or, I don't know.
In what way?
I get, so would Warden be more afraid of Blue Team convincing Cortana not to go through with it? Or was Warden kind of doing us a favor and trying to say, you don't want to get into this because Cortana is, I mean, judging by the discussion that's going on, it almost seems like the Warden's afraid that Cortana is going to bow to the will of Blue Team and the creators.
Well, yeah, that's I mean, that's a legitimate threat. You have the people, the race that created her, would you would think would carry a lot of sway over her decisions.
And then there's another line in here that says that her trust in Blue Team blinds her to the truth.
Exactly. I mean, it's obvious through the whole level, the Warden is trying to block Blue Team's progress. Hence the waves of enemies you fight.
In the end, it sounds like it wasn't even an issue because Cortana wasn't going to change her mind anyways, even after Chief got there.
Yeah. You hear it in Chief's voice, and this is one of the few times you really hear emotion in Chief's voice. He's asking Cortana to just please come home. And, you know, that line was almost as hard to hear as watching the end of Halo 4. Because it's, you know, one of the few times that you actually hear Chief show emotion. I mean, everything previous, he's pretty much all business. And in Halo 5, he has several points where you can hear the emotion in the words, especially when he's talking about Cortana. You know, in the very first team, in the very first mission, that, you know, Blue Team, you have one of the other Spartans ask him, what's Cortana up to? And you can hear a little bit of frustration in his voice. I don't know. Let's get this done and we'll figure it out. So, you know, you've got Chief feeling more of his humanity in this game. And then you have Cortana trying to co-opt him into her plan, the Battle of the Minds. There's a lot of information in this one level.
Yeah. Well, a lot just to think about overall in terms of how Cortana is going about trying to go through with the whole plan with the Guardians. But definitely a lot of kind of understanding what Cortana's position is and what she's out to do. I think we covered most of it, though. And we'll address the rest of it next week. Try to keep the show kind of short. Anyways. So next week we'll wrap up with the final mission, which will be on the Blue Team side of things. Getting the band. Nope, that's not that. That's the subtitle of the last one. Mission 15 is going to be
Guardians.
Yeah, Guardians. So,
and we'll
wrap it up then.
Get to play as Team Osiris
one last time, and Exuberant Witness.
Well, we don't get to play, but we get to talk. To
yes. Her. But that's what we'll be mostly talking about, is Exuberant Witness. And then Cortana making fun of Fireteam Osiris.
Which I have to admit, there's some really good lines in there.
There are some, but it's just like...
Not a lot of them, there are some. Yeah,
not all of them are that great. For an AI as smart as Cortana, they could have come up with some better lines.
They could have, yes.
Bungie was a little bit better at the comedy side of things, I think.
Well, yeah, they were. I mean, don't get me wrong, 343 does give it a good try, but Bungie definitely had a better comedic timing when it came to things.
You know, it's for how long, I mean, we're not going to go into it too much, but for how long the next mission is, like in terms of duration, the play space is actually not that big. Because you come out, you have a little hallway fight, then you have the area with the gravity generators. And then you have the one last room, and then you have the final walk.
Yeah, it's not that big of an area to traverse. It's just the amount of stuff that you have to do in the areas.
Yeah. And a lot of dialogue.
You know, the amount of enemies, yeah, there's a lot of dialogue. But, you know, this is the last mission. They're trying to wrap up the story that they want to tell. So, and since they didn't put it in the rest of the game, they have to spend a lot of time in the last level. There are a lot of good one-liners in this one, not spoke by Cortana.
Yeah, there's a few from Osiris that are pretty witty.
Yeah.
Did she just call me old?
Of course you'd expect that from Bob.
Oh yeah, of course. It's kind of appropriate given how old Nathan Fillion is too.
Yeah.
No offense.
I'm right there with him. Oh. there is, yeah, this mission 14, it gives you a lot to think about, you know, as far as motivations and goals of the Warden and Cortana. I mean, we know what Blue Team's goal is, stop Cortana. It's I like the way the level was, as far as the dialogue and the story was put together. It'd be nice if the rest of the game was done that way. Yeah, I think that's all I've got to say on it. How about you?
I think that's good enough for now. We'll cover the next mission next week and wrap this puppy up.
Let this one dry.
Yeah, we can finally start talking about stuff. Just in time for E3. Just in time for Halo Wars 2 stuff and whatever else they decide to talk about at E3.
Oh, don't even get me started on Halo Wars 2. I cannot wait.
Less than a month away until E3.
I know.
It's so hard to believe. I'll be there and I'll be flying out in 4 weeks, pretty much.
Lucky you.
4 weeks or 3 weeks? No.
I honestly can't even tell you when E3 is this year because I haven't looked yet.
No, 3.5 weeks. Oh, geez. Because it starts on the 14th, but the Microsoft press brief will be on the 13th. Oh, boy.
I'll have to make sure to tune in.
Yes. Anywho, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. You can check us out live on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for the live stream of this recording. Otherwise, you can check us out on iTunes and other podcast aggregators. And Google Play actually just opened up a podcast directory, so we're going to submit our podcast to them after I figure out what the heck is wrong with our podcast feed and get that fixed. That'll also lead the way to some other changes, some format changes on the live stream format. There's some other stuff they're going to be doing with some assets for streaming and hopefully get the game nights live streamed for the Spartan Company events as well. Working on getting that done here. And we also have our custom game nights or our Fragment Fridays with Mr. GT himself at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Fridays. That will be a mix of customs or depending on what playlists are out for the week, we'll be attempting those playlists. So last week, I believe it was A Trisket who hosted for Friday, and I think he did a mix of things, but it'll usually be custom games if there's not something crazy going on with playlists, or else we'll probably hop into those playlists. So whenever they had Super Fiesta or Warzone Turbo, we would hop in there sometimes on Fridays. Otherwise, customs. And Forge is getting very, very powerful. And we have Infection now, so customs will abound.
Yeah, this week is probably going to be Infection.
They still have Infection up there.
I played one game and actually...
Now?
I believe so. It should still be there tomorrow, I believe.
Okay.
Well, if it is, it is. If it's not, it's not.
Yeah, anyways. So we have our Spartan Company events on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We have Tactical Tuesday on Tuesday, and Wars on Wednesday on Wednesday. You can kind of figure out what those are. But those happen at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, respectively. Those are for Spartan Company members only. And we do have spots in our Spartan Company. I believe right now we're either at 14 or 15 out of the 31 kill combinations that we need for our Spartan Company to get the Achilles armor. And we're even that much more further from getting the helmet. But people are still doing some crazy work on getting those combinations done. So huge shout outs to everybody. We're still the one thing that we need the most is first strikes. That's the one combination that is the lowest one from all the combinations that we need.
Yeah, those first strikes are hard to get.
So I find them pretty easy to get in SWAT for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where I get the most of them is in SWAT, but it is definitely a timing thing. Truth is fun, usually,
for
trying to get first strike. Because, I mean, you spawn directly across from each other.
True, but I don't like Truth as a map. Truth as a map sucks. It really does. It's one of my least favorite maps in Halo 5.
Actually, I think Torque ranks right up there with me.
I
don't play well on that map.
It's a weird map to play on, but I don't know. I'm not as bad on Torque as I am with Truth.
Yeah, I do better on Truth than I do on Torque.
To each their own.
Probably. Probably because I know where the weapons spawn on Truth, and I'm not that sure where they all are on Torque yet.
Got it. Truth is just... we'll get into another time. We're kind of dragging on here a little bit. We have... I still haven't released that episode, have I? Jeez. Mm-hmm. All right. Hound me tomorrow. Because I even have the thumbnail done. And that was the one thing that was preventing me from posting it. And I even have the thumbnail done and I haven't posted it yet.
Is it on the website yet?
No, I haven't published it on YouTube.
No, have you put the thumbnail on the video yet?
I don't know if I don't think I've uploaded it yet. I know the thumbnail is done. Oh, okay. But all I have to do is put in the list of achievements and update the description and put in the thumbnail and it's done. I just haven't done
that. Why don't you do that right after the podcast? Then it's done.
Well, I'd like to publish it in the morning so people see it.
I didn't say you had to publish it. Just do what you have to.
Okay, fair point. Fair point.
And then publish it tomorrow.
I do have to call our new potential CM, though, after this call. So we had someone that reached out to us who was interested in possibly being our CM. So we might have one of those back.
Ooh.
It'll be so nice for me.
We'll have to put him on the podcast and torture him a little bit.
Not too much, though, because we still blame Beowulf.
We don't want to chase him away. We just want to have a little fun with him.
We're going to be hopefully having him start up with handling tweets and Facebooks and all that kind of stuff here pretty soon. So that takes a little bit of weight off of my shoulders. But we are still looking for volunteers, namely writers, if you can write and want to write posts. So whenever there's news that comes out, like today's Forge stuff, and you're able to kind of turn around pretty quickly with writing articles and can write well, could really use some of those because I'm not always in a position where I can write articles. So that's the thing that we need the absolute most, or I need the absolute most right now, is someone who can quickly turn around articles for the site. Need to re-engage with some of our other members because I haven't talked to people in a few months. Moving and weddings and moving other people and other stuff has been quite
painting houses, quite
hectic as of late. So I'm getting to a point, though, where my room is actually almost done in terms of everything organized. So I'll have time to actually do stuff other than picking things up around the house. That'll most likely be
Mr. 117.
Yeah, I like that number. So, yeah, if you are interested, you can head on over to podtagular.com/apply. And we'll try to get you roped into the staff, which will be awesome. There's also a couple other things that we're looking at. If there is a good kind of like, if there's anyone out there that's good at doing montage type stuff, we'd like to do a kind of like a top five or top plays for our Spartan company. So that would basically entail going through Waypoint, pulling out clips, throwing stuff together in Premiere or Final Cut or whatever you have, and something that we can throw up on YouTube every other week or every month or something like that. And there's a couple other things. So if you're interested in just helping out at all, go ahead and apply. There's a place in there for you to put a portfolio. That's not necessarily an application criteria. That just kind of helps us determine where we can best fit you on the team. So if you're interested in helping out, I encourage you to apply and we will go from there. I'm going to reiterate again one more time on the t-shirt. Again, it's going on until, I believe, next Sunday, which will be the 28th or the 29th. Sorry. This is the only time that the Keep Calm and hashtag Blame Bible shirt will be on sale for the foreseeable future. It's your one chance to get it. $18, Teespring. You can go to teespring.com/podtackler-kcbb. And get your t-shirt there. It comes in all kinds of sizes that you can get. And also make sure you check out the other podcast that's going to be part of our little tournament, the Drunken Halo, the Delta Halo podcast, and Podcast Evolved. You need to get Delta Halo because they're a really fairly new podcast. They're in their 20th episode right now, and I have a few of their podcasts downloaded to start listening to them. But there's new couple podcasts on the block that we need to reach out and welcome as our talk to and welcome as our podcast brethren. So good stuff. And finally, can't go on without saying shout outs to our podcasting group, the podcast network. You can find more about that over at podka.st. And we are part of a conglomerate of gaming-specific shows, including Critzcast, which is a TF2 podcast. And they're breaking off their Overwatch stuff. So they'll actually be doing two podcasts for that. They haven't announced what they're going to be calling their new podcast or when it's out yet, but it is coming within the next 2 weeks. So there'll be another podcast likely added to the network. There's also Guardian Radio, which is a Destiny podcast. There is the Learning Cliff, which is an EVE Online podcast. There is Work in Progress and How to Murder Time as well. So make sure you check them out. Let them know that we sent you. There are some other great podcasts to listen to for sure. That'll be it for us tonight. Thanks everyone for tuning in, both in the Twitch chat and for downloading us on iTunes or wherever you download us and listen to us. We really appreciate it. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, all that fun stuff. And we will see you guys next week. Keep on fragging, Beowulf.
Laters.